is Matthew Wayne Selznick, and this is Sonatotum, episode 87. Hello, my friends. On this and every episode of Sonatotum, we talk about making stuff, mostly writing, finding success as we each define it, and staying healthy and sane in the process. Who am I to be talking to you about such things? Well, I've been an independent DIY creator since, a very long time. I have over a dozen works on the market, fiction and nonfiction, novels, short stories, novelettes, anthologies, and I make a living helping other folks bring their own creative endeavors to fruition, to market, and to an audience. So on Sonatotum, I flip between interview episodes, where I talk to another creative person, usually a writer or author of some kind. And we talk about, you know, the things, making stuff, finding success, staying healthy and sane. And then the other week, it's just me talking to you about what I've been up to in my creative life since the last time I shared those things with you. And hopefully, what I have to talk about is, at the very least, interesting, possibly entertaining, and maybe something that helps you in your own creative life. There are two versions of the show. Did you know that? There's the uncut, unedited edition of the show, which goes out to my patrons, my multiversalists. You'll hear more about that later on. And I only think about this is because I was just explaining to my patrons. This is getting very meta, especially if you are a patron, that it's kind of late in the day. The day before I usually release these episodes, it is June 6th, 2023. It's a Tuesday evening, a little bit after 6 o'clock. So regular listeners might hear a little bit of lower energy in my tone, in my voice. It's been a couple of long days since the last time I actually talked to you about what's been going on in my creative life. It's been a little stretch of time. We had the interview episode, last episode in Sonatotum 86 with Krista Walsh. You can find that at mattselznick.com/sonatotum-086. And then before that was my retrospective and my looking back on attending the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association Nebula Conference that was in Anaheim in the middle of May. And then the episode before that was an encore episode because I had just gotten back from that conference and I didn't have the time or the wherewithal or the anything to create a new episode. So it's been a while since I've talked about what's been going on in my creative life. So let's do that. First of all, I've been doing interviews, talking to folks. As usual, every conversation I have with another writer turns out to be just so useful, so much value from these different perspectives. And I hope that if you're a regular listener to the show, that you're enjoying those interviews. If you're just brand new here, by the way, I encourage you to go back and listen to some of the previous interviews that have been done. And if you check out the show notes for each of those episodes, you'll find links on where to buy these writers and authors, where to buy their stuff, because that's important. We can make stuff, but if people aren't experiencing it, then I don't know. To me, it feels a little diminished. Creation for creation's sake is one thing. I mean, one of the recurring themes that comes up so often when I'm talking to folks is that they can't not create. And I feel the same way. I get grouchy if I'm not making stuff on a regular basis. But I don't think it's really art until someone else, other than the person who made the thing, experiences the thing. It's a conversation. It's a collaborative experience. So support one of the authors that you hear being interviewed on this show. You can just go to mattselznick.com, click on the podcast link at the top in the menu there, and just browse through. Listen to what some of these folks have had to say. I've been doing these interviews for a few months now, every other episode. So you've got a lot to choose from. Pretty decent variety. And as I said, more to come. I've got stuff recorded to take us well into late summer. Anyway, so I've been having these conversations with writers, and that's good. That's fun. It's exciting. I work from my home office, the lush and lavish studios of MWS Media in Huntington Beach, California. And so it's great to be able to take an hour and a half every few days and sit down and hear another writer's voice in my headphones and chat with them. So I've been enjoying that. However, it does take away from the time available to do other things. So my own creative stuff. Well, I'm digging back into my work in progress, the next novel on the plate, which is Shadow of the Outsider. And I don't recall if I mentioned this in a past episode, but there's more of you every week, which is lovely. So some of you have not heard about this. I've been struggling with Shadow of the Outsider for some time. I know the general beats of the book. I understand pretty much the character arcs. But I was having trouble just finding the voice for it until I realized that the voice should be the voice of the protagonist. And it's not going to be a first-person novel, but it will be an epistolary novel. It'll be written as if you, dear reader, are reading the field notes, the journal, if you will, of the main character. And that's going to prove to be a fun challenge, because if you're only experiencing the story through their record of events, then there's going to be a lot that isn't known to this character. There's going to be a lot that isn't seen firsthand for the reader. It's going to be an interesting challenge, and I don't think it's going to be like, well, I know just by its very nature, by the structure, by the approach, it's not going to be like anything I have written to date. And I'm wondering what to do with those off-screen, if you will, parts. The events that occur outside of the main character's experience. There is easily a whole other story there. And not quite sure if that means that this might just be two short books, or I don't know. We'll see. But I've spent some time thinking about that and kind of revisiting my old notes. That's felt good, although it's been a little draggy. I haven't had as much time as I would like. And it's been a couple of weeks since I've been back from the conference, and I have definitely not hit the ground running when it comes to that, but I'm trying to be kind to myself. The other thing two other things of note in the last few weeks. The first is writers and artificial intelligence. That issue, that subject has flared up again, because a company that puts out a piece of software called SudoWrite, S-U-D-O, write, like writer, write. They launched a new feature powered by large language model AI, powered by, you know, ChatGPT, probably heard of by now. And if you haven't, I'll have links and stuff you can follow up on in the show notes for this episode, episode 87. Of Sonnetotum, which you can find over there at mattselznick.com/sonnetotum-087. And by the way, that's Sonnetotum is S-O-N-I-T-O-T-U-M. Sonnetotum. Anyway, the idea behind this new tool, that's part of the SudoWrite application product, is that you can feed it notes about your book that you want to write, your story that you want to write. You can feed it character descriptions and even a scene outline, and it will spit out a long form work of narrative fiction that you are, you know, expected to tinker with and put your own stamp on it and all that. I'm going to say most of the writers that I've heard from are offended by the existence of this thing. I suppose it might be a useful tool for some kind of writer, but I don't know, man. There's a whole process, and I know most of you folks who listen are writers, so you don't need to be told this, but there's a whole process. There's a whole alchemy. There's a whole magic that comes in sussing out fiction yourself. Story is an emergent property of thinking about story, creating connections that only happen because of what you put in, mixed with your personality, your worldview, your intrinsic self, with a dash of whatever mood you might be in at the time, whatever you've gone through that day or didn't do that day. All these unknowables influence us as we are creating our fiction. A large language model, generative AI, does not have that. It only has what it's been fed, what it's been trained on. And we're going to get into that in a second. It only has the ability to string together words based on, and I know that this isn't exactly how it works, but it's close enough. It only has the ability to string together words based on the likelihood, the probability that the next word in the sequence makes sense given all the variables. That's not thinking. That's not creating. That's finding the right tab B to go into slot A, you know? So especially on Twitter, I'm Matt Selznick over there on Twitter, if you'd like to follow, MattSelznick. The writing community was kind of like, this is just bullshit, basically. But here's where it becomes even more bullshit. So there's this thing called Book Corpus. It is a database of, I forget, 10,000, 15,000 individual works of fiction that were pulled from the free catalog of an online marketplace called Smashwords. They sell ebooks. So a few years back, creators of Book Corpus wrote up a little script, a little robot, a little bot, set it loose on Smashwords across the internet, and they call it scraping, which is just as violent and visceral and violating as it sounds. This bot scraped Smashwords, found all the free books, and put them in this database. This database is one of the things that's used to train ChatGPT and several other large language models. And by train, basically, it just means that the machine learns about which word comes best in the sequence, given all the other words, right? It learns how to do that by analyzing large amounts of words. And here's why this is a problem, if you haven't figured it out. Nobody gave permission to do that. None of those authors even knew it had been done until recently. So anytime you use ChatGPT, anytime you use most text-based AIs created by OpenAI or similar companies, or anytime you use a product that uses ChatGPT, OpenAI technology, you're benefiting off the backs of thousands of unauthorized, copyrighted books. And I've got a real problem with that. It's an ethical conundrum because, well, this is kind of what pushed me over the edge on this, as if I needed to be pushed. If you do your research on Book Corpus and you read the descriptions, there's a phrase, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but there's a phrase that keeps getting repeated. It's on the Wikipedia page. It's on the original Book Corpus webpage that the source was unpublished books, which is just blatantly untrue. These books are self-published. They're under copyright. And just because they're free doesn't mean they're free as in nobody needs to be compensated. They're not public domain, with a few exceptions. They're not public domain. So writers are kind of pissed off that, among other AI software applications, among other AI solutions, PseudoWrite is basically saying, we'll use this AI to help you write your novel. It's an AI that basically was taught on ill-gotten goods. So you're writing your novel. If you use PseudoWrite, you are writing your novel, again, on the backs of other authors who were not compensated for the use of their works in training the little baby AI that became ChatGPT. All of this has led me to add to my statement of ethics and principles on my website. Basically, what I'll do, what I won't do, what I believe in, who I'll work with, who I won't work with. It's caused me to have to add a statement on AI and my use of AI. I'll have a link to my statement of ethics and principles in the show notes for this episode. Episode 87, over there at mattselznick.com/sonatotum-087. So my overall statement of ethics and principles is longer, but this is the part on AI. And it might change slightly, but this is the draft right now. Regarding the use of large language model and generative artificial intelligence, including tools, services, and software that employ such technologies as a service, to the best of my knowledge, I do not publish or otherwise distribute or attribute to myself any work created in whole or in part by any AI tool or service trained using copyrighted materials accessed without the express permission of the copyright holders. In the creation of my own work or works for hire in the service of others, I never knowingly use such a tool, service, or software application trained using copyrighted materials accessed without the expressed permission of the copyright holders. To the best of my knowledge, I restrict my use of LLM generative AI tools and services to self-hosted, locally installed tools and services trained either on public domain assets or assets in which I own the copyright or possess an applicable license to use. For brevity's sake, and in this context, I refer to this as ethical AI. I clearly and plainly disclose the use of ethical AI tools and services when they are used to aid in the creation of my own publicly distributed and or published works. In a nutshell, if a tool or a service that depends on AI that was trained using copyrighted assets without permission, if there is such a tool, I will not knowingly use it. When I do use AI tools, notwithstanding that last bit, as much as possible, they will be locally installed, open source, and trained on my own materials or materials that don't exploit the copyrights of others. And if somehow AI is incorporated in the creations of my own works, which is very, very unlikely, I will disclose how and to what extent. I think that's good enough for now. I think that says enough. You know, basically, I'm not going to use something that wouldn't exist if they hadn't ripped off writers. Right? That's been going around. And I belong to two writerly professional organizations, right? The Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association and the Alliance of Independent Authors. And while I recognize that, of course, it's not these organizations' place to dictate what its members do when it comes to AI and these kinds of tools, I'd also kind of like to have them take a little stronger stance. It seems like the Alliance of Independent Authors, or ALI as it's often referred to, they've got a few high-ranking vocal members who seem to have been, I don't know, kind of given carte blanche as the voice of the organization in this matter. And they seem pretty either ambivalent or totally cool with all these unethical things that I've just mentioned. And so that's really unfortunate. And it really causes me to call into question why I'm even a member of that organization. The Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association, on the other hand, other than creating a sort of a big long blog post linking to other blog posts and podcast episodes, including one that I did a few months back, which I'll have a link to in the show notes for Sonototum 87. They've taken that stance. They've just gathered up a bunch of opinions from their members and put them all in one place so that y'all can sort it out. But again, I would prefer that there be an official suggestion, an official recommendation that specifically mentions these ethical issues. Doesn't mean the members all have to abide by that, but you know, you got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything, right? That's the old saw. So that's been on my mind. And I'm working on a Scribtotum article, a blog post. Scribtotum is the blog. Sonototum is the podcast. I'm working on an article that fleshes out my thoughts on this whole thing. And that'll be over there at mattselznick.com soon. Let's take a quick little break so that pre-recorded me, well, I mean, it's all pre-recorded to you, past me, let's put it that way. Well, it's all past you. Long ago, previously recorded me has a few things to say to you. Stick around. Hey there. If you've enjoyed this or any other episode of Sonototum, here are three things you can do to help support the show. The first thing, if you haven't already, please subscribe for free to Sonototum with Matthew Wayne Selznick wherever you get your podcasts. Whichever app or platform you use, find that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Second thing, please just take a moment to rate and review Sonototum. Again, wherever you get your podcasts. Rating is quick and easy. 5 stars is very nice. Go ahead and give the show whatever you think the show deserves. If you have just a few minutes more, please let the world know why you enjoy the show, why other people should listen to it and subscribe, by writing a brief review in your own words. Subscribing, rating, and reviewing, that all costs you nothing but time, but they make a big difference for the show, because when people are looking for podcasts on the writing and creative life, Sonototum is more likely to show up in search results if it has a high rating and some nice reviews. Finally, Sonototum with Matthew Wayne Selznick is made available for free and has no advertising, but it does cost time, resources, and money to produce every single week. If you'd like to go the extra mile and you have the will and the means, I hope you'll consider becoming a patron to offset the cost associated with the show and my other creative endeavors. Not only will you be a member of the Multiversalists community of writers, readers, and creators, you'll receive special access, perks, and exclusive content, the least of which is the uncut, unproduced edition of every episode of Sonototum. Also, get this, your first 7 days are free. After that free trial, it's just $5 per month. Visit mattselznick.com/b-a-patron to find out more and to start your free trial. That's it. If you do one or two or all three of those things, you'll really be helping the show, and more people like you will discover the Sonototum mission of helping writers and other creators make stuff, find success, and stay healthy and sane in the process. Thank you. The other thing that happened, and this is more recently, but it's falls under the heading of sort of the housekeeping and ongoing work involved in being a self-published author. Amazon recently revamped how they do their categories. And you have heard me rail about the Amazon taxonomy and how ridiculous I think it is. But if you want to sell books on Amazon, it's important that you are in the categories that make the most sense so that your book gets found by people who maybe possibly might want to read it. And they've changed things up. In the past, you could only select categories that were sort of based on the larger industry standard list of categories and subcategories for fiction and nonfiction. And it seems to be that Amazon has changed that so that if you self-publish with them, you can actually assign categories that actually exist in Amazon. And I could be wrong about this, but that's the gist. And the other thing that happened is you used to only be able to select two categories for your book, at least select two categories without writing Amazon and saying, would you please, pretty please, add my book to these other categories too? Now you can select three right there in the Kindle Direct Publishing dashboard, which is where you upload and manage the publication of your self-published books on Amazon. So I went through on Friday, a few days ago, and I adjusted and cleaned up all the categories of all my books and short stories and whatever, every product, every fiction and nonfiction product that I sell on Amazon. And I got an email from Amazon warning me that one of my books had been blocked, that it had been taken off sale, and they needed to ask me just a few questions. Now, the book is Reading the Amazing Spider-Man. This is a little nonfiction book of mine that is a sort of a tongue-in-cheek, loving, winking, critical review of the first 12 issues of the comic book, The Amazing Spider-Man, that came out in what, 1963, I think? So I'm looking at those first 12 issues and kind of recapping them and pointing out the storytelling in those 12 issues. And I also have commentary about how we can learn from this stuff, how Stan Lee and Steve Ditko basically created an entire long enduring 60 years and counting franchise. And pretty much everything about it is laid out in those first 12 issues, all the important stuff. So that's Reading the Amazing Spider-Man. You can find it anywhere ebooks are sold, or you can buy it directly from me at mattselznick.com/books. And by the way, when you buy any of my ebooks at mattselznick.com/books, you can name your price, dear listener. Pay as little as a dollar, pay as much as you like. So Amazon said, well, hold on a minute there with this Reading the Amazing Spider-Man thing. What is this? And so I had to prove that, the material within was mine. And by prove, I mean, I had to write them a little email reply saying, yes, all this is stuff that I wrote. And yes, it has value. And here's the point of the thing. And it is similar to this book or that book. Because I think they thought maybe I was just ripping off Marvel, Disney whole cloth, which I'm not. Sent me another email back and said, well, we're going to have to look into this a little further. And then today got an email from them saying, okay, well, that's all cool, but we don't want the book to be in this particular category. And the category, and I'm not looking at this right now, so this might not be exactly right, but the category was comics and graphic novels / reference and criticism / writing instruction or something like that. Pretty much exactly describing what Reading the Amazing Spider-Man is. And they said, because this is not a comic book, that the book doesn't convey the information in sequential art, it doesn't belong in the comics and graphic novels section. And I wrote back, well, but there are other books in this particular subcategory where I'm trying to put my book. There are other books that are almost entirely text because, for example, Denny O'Neill, the great Marvel and DC comics writer who's been dead a few years now, he's got a book in there called, How to Write Comics or something like that. I'll have a link in the show notes. And sure, it's illustrated with panels from Batman and Green Lantern and Green Arrow and whatever. But the book is almost entirely text because it's a book about writing comics, not drawing comics. Over on my bookshelf behind me, I've got Brian Michael Bendis's Words for Pictures, which again, sure, there's illustrations in it, but it doesn't do the job of telling you how to write comics with comics. It does it with prose. So that was my argument. Amazon didn't care about my argument. So fuck it. I changed category because I want to be able to sell the book. But this is what's wrong, again, with the Amazon system. However, you know, good with the bad. Hopefully this, the across the board refinement of categories and giving us authors a little more leeway, not so much leeway, but choice, being able to manually add three categories instead of two, maybe it'll help me sell some more books. I don't know. But if you haven't gone in, if you publish through KDP and you haven't gone into your catalog and double checked and changed your categories, you ought to do that. A very good idea is to look at similar books and try to figure out what categories they are in. Now, be aware that the Amazon charts, you know, if you kind of scroll down a page on any book on Amazon, it'll say, you know, this book is number such and such on this chart and number such and such on that chart. The Amazon charts are not the same thing as the Amazon categories. Of course they're not, right? I don't know how those things are connected, but they're not. But still, being in the right category for your books will at least hopefully get you seen by the folks that are most likely to buy something like what you're trying to sell them. This is the part of the show where I thank my multiversalists, my patrons. You heard about how to become a multiversalist a little earlier in the pre-recorded section, the interstitial, I like to call it. So thank you to my multiversalist patrons, Chuck Anderson, Amy Bowen, J.C. Hutchins, and Ted Leonhardt. Thank you also to my two other patrons who do not pledge at the official multiversalist level. They are patrons for the love, and I love them for that. They know who they are. And very briefly, my friends, because it's already been mentioned, and I asked you to hang around for it, and you did. Very briefly, if you would like to become a multiversalist and help support this show and my other creative endeavors, it's just $5 a month. You can go over there to mattselznick.com/b-a-patron, and you can get set up. Oh, and by the way, there is, don't forget, a 7-day free trial. So you can access everything in those 7 days. See if you like it. See if you want to stick around. See if what I've done, what I've given away already, is worth your $5 a month in the future. As always, I would like your feedback. I'm always open to these episodes being a conversation, not a monologue. So even if the conversation is time shifted. So please, you can leave your comments in the show notes for this episode, episode 87, over there at mattselznick.com/sonnetotum-087. You can also just send me an email at matt@mattselznick.com. Some folks every once in a while like to record a little voice message on their phone and email that to me at matt@mattselznick.com. Comments in the show notes, I will reply there. Emails sent to me, I will reply similarly. And if you record a little voice message, I will play it in a future show and reply in the show. One way or the other, we'll be chatting to each other, talking to each other. All right, friends. Next week is an interview. I should have it in front of me who that person is. I'm apologizing right now because I don't. But it's going to be a conversation with an author, writer, creator. And it's going to be awesome. And you're going to get a lot out of it. And that's next week. So don't forget to subscribe to Sonatotum with Matthew Wayne Selznick. Anywhere you get your podcasts. And oh yeah, that's me. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. Take care.